Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the senior United States Senator from Pennsylvania, Bob Casey. Now remember, we love taking your questions, so write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. Please check out the links to our sponsors, Naked Wines, The Washington Post, and Miracle Made in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It helps make this podcast happen. Please tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. James, we got some stuff to talk about. We're going to get to Mitch McConnell in a minute. But first, Michigan. Third contest this year, Biden won 80% of the vote, Trump 70%. I actually think those contests and the others show the weakness of both candidates more than the strength. Trump is losing 30 to 40% of Republican votes when they know he'll be the nominee. Now, his MAGA core is as strong as ever, combined with voters who automatically vote Republican. And, you know, that's maybe, 39%. But that other 5 to 7% he needs to win in a multi-candidate field is soft. And some armchair analysts say, yeah, but, he does well in independents and polls. But, I pay more attention to how independents are when they actually vote. That's when they're more focused. And he's got some problems. The Biden camp has big problems, too. They have to worry about the what it was, I guess, 15% that voted uncommitted as a protest to what they view as his one-sided position on the Gaza war. If that war is still going on 4 or 5 months, Joe Biden is in even deeper trouble than anyone imagined. But I'll tell you what else should worry him, even if it's not going on, and that's the turnout. It was really bad. The Republicans outperformed them by about 30%. And granted, the latter, the GOP may have had a more seriously contested race, but it's another sign of a less than energized Democratic Party, which has to change if Biden is to win in November.
Well, I don't see much to argue with you here. Look, we knew this stuff in Gaza was a political problem, particularly on the Democratic side going into Michigan. We came out of Michigan. We still know it's a political problem. And I think this is being reported too much as well. There's a lot of Arabs there, and there's young people, University of Michigan. I don't know. This problem is deeper than just Muslim Americans or people under 25. And I don't think this is going to do anything but grow. And of course, it's in Biden's political interest and interest of the United States to try to scale this thing down. Of course, Bibi. It's in his interest to stay out of jail to keep scaling it up. And we've talked about this before on this show. If this thing is still going on, God forbid that it would be, come the Democratic convention, it's going to be
Chicago redux.
And not a very pretty sight in Chicago. But it's a problem. And you're right, in our turnout, our enthusiasm among Black voters and young voters is abysmal. Hopefully we can try to address some of this here in the coming 6 weeks or so. But it's a problem that just, it doesn't get any better. It gets slightly worse.
I agree with everything you just said. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Trump has problems too. And the Republicans have problems too. I mean, all of this is before any criminal trial. I mean, he's already lost a huge civil trial. He offered today to fork over $100 million because he said he couldn't afford anything more. He's been bragging now for the last 8 years that he's a wealthy billionaire. Now it's coming home to reality. And I don't know if any of the criminal trial, particularly the January 6th, will go to trial before the election. I think it will, unless the judges and the Supreme Court decide to delay it. And if it does, it's a powerful case. And if he's a convicted criminal, I don't know, James, I thought Access Hollywood, I thought, trying to intimidate the Ukrainians and have them lie about Joe Biden, I thought January 6th all would be, terrible for him, a death knell. It hasn't. I think a criminal conviction might be.
So this is a critique I ever feel pretty strong about. You're right. And people are obsessed. And it's endless. When is it going to be? When the Supreme Court can say? We better go to post with what we got. All right. What we got is this. We're winning elections left and right. We have more money than they have. We have problems with what's going on in Gaza. They have monumental problems what's going on with women's health care, with book murder. I think he's an adjudicated rapist. I think that the attitude of Democrats is Will Wade and maybe Jack Smith will get him, or maybe Alvin Bragg will get him, or maybe somebody else will get him. I think we just got to start hitting this guy. Don't look back. We got and they're in a weaker position than they are. They're in a weaker position than we are. And whenever you have an advantage, which the Democrats have right now, it's hard to believe that when you look at our, you know, really tepid polling numbers, which are not impressive at all. But we have got to jump on them now and jump hard. And, you know, there were 195 House Republicans that voted against a federal legislation to make contraception legal. That's the next thing they're coming for. And, you know, we said, I said they're coming for the right to choose. Oh, no, they're not going to do that. They'll just squeeze it a little bit, but they're not that crazy. Well, they were that fucking crazy. And now they're coming for contraception. And, of course, the answer's going to be, well, it won't be that crazy. I mean, Alito won't let him do it. Oh, yes, he will. And we got to tell people what's going on. And, you know, in this book burning, they're trying to get away from that as fast as they can. And we're out there painting an exit ramp for them. No. Somebody go and find a list of every goddamn book they tried to burn or exclude from a classroom. I have never known a single Democrat to be a book burner. But we got to make them pay. We can't wait down the line for this. And we're going to have weaknesses. Biden's age is an issue. McConnell retiring made it even more of an issue. But they got issues, too, and we got to start kicking them.
Well, you bring up Mitch McConnell, who did announce on Wednesday he was retiring. The story is actually broken by our Sunday Zoom colleague, Mike Tackett, who's writing a biography of the Kentucky Republican. James, I have been a pretty steady critic of McConnell over the years. I'm not going to back down from those criticisms. What he did in the Supreme Court nominations, I think, displayed a contempt for the court and the Senate. He failed to condemn Russian interference with the 2016 elections. And I believe he made a major miscalculation in early 2021 when he could have delivered the votes to convict Trump and we would have been rid of that evil menace in politics. I also disagree with my money in politics. However, having said all of that, when you consider some other issues like the budget and Ukraine, he is a voice of comparative reason. He's willing to deal most of the time, which I doubt his successors will be. And approve of him or not, and I'm more on the negative side, he is one of the most powerful Senate leaders in the last half century. That's just a reality.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, he unilaterally changed the number on the Supreme Court. He is the person with Leonard Leo most responsible for the complete overtaking of an entire branch of government. But yes, would he negotiate on Ukraine and other things? Okay. I mean, it's pretty minimum standard, but let's acknowledge that he met that standard. And, you know, of course, him saying that he's retiring does not help Biden at all, because every story is about how he's quitting and Pelosi's quitting and Cliven's quitting and Biden's not. It's just, you can't wish that shit away.
You know, it goes back to our original theme of Michigan, et cetera. It doesn't help Biden, and it doesn't help the Republicans.
No.
Because wait till you see who succeeds him. I mean, the one thing he is, and I just enumerated my problems with him, he is smart, savvy, and he knows politics.
He does.
I can't see a successor in sight who comes anywhere close
to him. But the other big thing he could do, and he's kind of too old, he could really raise money. He could raise all that money.
Yeah.
Ask Jane Mayer. He's the dark money.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to count Mitch McConnell, the Biden, well or bad, he did this with the federal judiciary and everything. His number one legacy, his number one negative legacy is he is the guy most responsible for the flood of dark and corporate money in American politics. Not even close. And that...
I think the court's a tie. I think they're a 1-2 punch.
The people in the courts that did that, but you can, at every juncture, he is the dark money political champion of the United States, and that's got to be on his tombstone.
No question. James, our guest, Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, is one of the very few senators liked and respected by both sides. He's seeking his fourth term this November, running against a Republican billionaire. Lots to talk about, Senator, but first, your reaction to the news Wednesday afternoon that Mitch McConnell, the longest-serving Senate leader, is stepping down this year?
Well, I have to say that it took me by surprise. I hadn't had any conversations with Mitch about this, but it was surprising. But it's he's had a difficult year physically, so I don't know if that's causing it. But it'll be a significant loss to their caucus.
Yeah. It will. Let me talk about some issues confronting the Senate now. You apparently have avoided a government shutdown, but it's only postponed for several weeks. This is a game of Russian roulette. I mean, it just is a hell of a way to run a railroad, isn't it, Senator?
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone who's rational would prefer having these short-term CRs. It's kind of stop-and-go government. But that's the position that Republicans often put the Congress in, which is to have kind of the extremes drive the train, and the most extreme. There's never been a house like this in American history, this extreme, radical right house. And so they put us in this position. We have to figure out every time there's a deadline, a new way to come up with an agreement to fund the government. But the only good news here is it is the House. Leader Schumer, Leader McConnell, Leader Jeffries are all on the same page to avoid a shutdown and get a deal. And the administration obviously is as well. So I hope that Speaker Johnson will both allow a consensus to prevail to fund the government and to fund the security supplemental on Ukraine and Israel, as well as as part of that, making it possible to pass the fend off fentanyl legislation, which is bipartisan legislation I've worked on, as have many in the Senate on both sides of the aisle, to give the federal government and the president both more authority and additional steps to crack down on fentanyl by way of sanctioning the bad guys in China, where it starts, with these precursor chemicals, and to crack down on these cartels with more heavy-duty sanctions and anti-money laundering provisions for the Treasury Department. So the one of the biggest wins that we could imagine to just begin to cut back on fentanyl trafficking is part of this Ukraine bill. So we want that to get passed, and it's all down to whether the Speaker will allow a vote or not.
Senator Casey, you have won 3 elections for the Senate and earlier state offices. You've usually won comfortably. Your opponent this year, David McCormick, is a billionaire who is also raising money from other of the guiltless rich crowd. That's a pretty difficult race, isn't it?
A really tough race, Al, no question about it. You and James know our state pretty well. It's a state that often is close. In a presidential, recent presidentials, even more so. So when you combine the year that I'm running in, a presidential year, plus the virtually unlimited wealth of my opponent. And you add in the fact that already, after just 4 months of work, two of his billionaire friends have set up an $18 million super PAC, and that super PAC will grow easily to $50 million. And so they're going to try to pummel me while he's promoting himself. So it's going to be a rough, tough, close race.
Yeah, he's a longtime Pennsylvanian, isn't he?
Talk about a loaded question.
He told the people of our state when he started running in 2022 in that Republican primary, and ever since then he told people he was living in Pennsylvania. You know, he had grown up in Pennsylvania, and then was spending a lot of time in Connecticut as a hedge fund manager, or CEO, I should say. And when he came back, he said he was living in Pennsylvania, but the Associated Press caught him in his lie. He's not living in Pennsylvania. He lives in Connecticut. Simple as that. And I think that's going to be an issue in this campaign, because people in our state want to be represented by someone who understands the state, who has lived in the state. I live in the same house in Scranton that I've lived in since 1991, and grew up in the city and spent virtually every with a couple of years in college and one or two other years, virtually every year of my life in Pennsylvania. So I think it's going to be an issue.
Senator, is Joe Biden going to be a drag on you and your ticket?
No, I think President Biden's going to win the state. It's going to be hard. Exceedingly difficult, but I think he's going to win the state, and I'm going to win too. But it's a tough, tough race. There's no question about it in both of them, both the Senate race and the presidential race. But we're used to tough battles.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague James Carver, who knows a little bit about tough battles in Pennsylvania, with the Casey at the top with the ticket. James, go ahead.
So, Senator, I want to get to something really important. I'm understanding on March 16th that President Clinton's going to be talking to the Friendly Sons in Scranton.
Right. I heard
and
that.
And I'm trying to come. I texted with Governor Shapiro. He told me he's moving his schedule around, and he's coming too because he doesn't want to miss the great event. And Lynn Brown, Jim Brown's wife, says it's nothing but red faces and white hair.
It's quite an event. It's, you know, this.
I'm really trying to get up there because I have so many friends in Scranton and so many friends in Pennsylvania. You're still a United States Senator. Tell us a little bit about some of the legislation that you're working on and things that you're trying to advance here going forward. And what are you going to continue to work on through your fourth term coming up?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned earlier, James, this fentanyl problem. We've got a terrible problem throughout the country, as you know, the trafficking of fentanyl. But by the way, most of the fentanyl trafficked into the United States through ports of entry is trafficked by American citizens, which is often missed in the debate. But it's a vexing problem. And one of the ways that we can attack this problem, in addition to the broader issues about border security, the Republicans should have worked with us to pass the bipartisan border deal, which would have allowed us to hire thousands more Border Patrol and ICE agents and beef up security at the border. But in addition to that, we lost the opportunity because they blew up the deal, Senate Republicans. We lost the opportunity to invest in the best technology in the world to find fentanyl in every vehicle that passes through the ports of entry. In cargo and vehicles, this technology is so sophisticated, it can find fentanyl in a car tire, in a compartment in a car, wherever it is, it can find it. And that bill would have provided us an additional $1 billion for that. So when that deal went down, I wanted to make sure that we had a backup for that. So I introduced a bill that will provide that same kind of funding for technology to stop fentanyl at the border. And that's going to be, unfortunately, that's not done. That's going to continue to be the subject of my work this year. And I hope we can pass it this year. But if not, and if I'm reelected, I want to continue to work on that next year. But I hope I don't have to. I hope we can pass the bill. But that's one area where we're working on. I think there's some issues where I've been pushing very hard to pass legislation to lift up families. We have an opportunity and a tax bill coming up. Once again, unless Senate Republicans block it, but a bipartisan tax bill that will reinstitute the child tax credit or parts of the child tax credit from 2021. We're focused on a lot of low-income families that benefit from that child tax credit so they can buy food for their children. The same bill will also help a lot of small businesses across the country. So I think one of the most important things I could do in the Senate in the next couple of years is to make sure that we bring back a much more robust version of the child tax credit. It is a transformative way to reduce child poverty and to help families raise their kids, especially when a lot of families don't have, you know, they're paying higher food prices, which is another thing I've been working on, which is our greedflation reports, where we're going after big companies that are jacking up their prices, especially food prices, while corporate profits are going through the roof. So that's just a quick summary, but we could talk about more.
So Senator, you know, we talk about the border, and as you pointed out, we had legislation that we all supported. It so happened last week, my wife and I were in El Paso speaking to a business group. These were hardly, they weren't particularly partisan people, but they were certainly not partisan Democrats at all. And strangely enough, the person that they really like is Secretary Mayorkas. They think he listens to them. They think people come down there. They all take pictures. They leave. They don't understand what life is. And I was kind of mildly pleased and surprised that they all had pretty favorable things to say about him. And they've made him into this sort of horrible boogeyman that is not, doesn't even comport at all with who this guy is or his background or anything else. But I just pass that on to you because I thought that was a kind of interesting. And again, this did not come from the Democratic state senator or anybody else. This came from like people that we know, you know him in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania Society, Chamber of Commerce people.
Well, Secretary Mayorkas, James, as you know, was part of that negotiation in the Senate where James Lankford, who's about as conservative as you get, and he was the lead negotiator for Republicans, he wanted to make sure Mayorkas was in the room because he knew that of Mayorkas's knowledge of border security, obviously. Very few people in the country know more, and he had confidence in him. And so when they made that deal between those senators and then eventually a broader deal, which Senate Republicans blew up, Secretary Mayorkas was right in the middle of that, working on the details of it, because it's complicated stuff.
So before I turn back to Al, I'll point out, we had Senator Lankford on considerably early, and he just struck me as, you know, he's a pretty bright-wing guy. He's a bit disagreeing politically, but he seemed like a nice enough guy, and at least he was trying to do something. And so if you see him, would you please tell him that Al and I send him our best, and we remember fondly when he was on our podcast.
I will.
And we'll invite him back. Senator, you mentioned something about greed, grubbing companies, and maybe that has a lot to do with the fears of the cost of living. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, Al, it's something that I think a lot of people most people in Washington didn't pay much attention to, but for years, this term greedflation has been around, and it's basically this: it's basically when a corporation has their prices jacked up well beyond their costs. Now, no one would begrudge a company if their costs are going up for whatever reason to increase their prices to offset that. But companies, a lot of big companies, a lot of the big food conglomerates and others, jacked up their prices. And corporate profits went up 75% between July of 20 and July of 22, five times the rate of inflation, five times. So we just pointed that out. We talked about greedflation. We talked about we can directly attribute increased cost to families in Pennsylvania to one thing, greedflation. Now, did greedflation cause all the inflation in 2021, 22, 23? No, but it caused a hell of a lot of it. A big chunk of the inflation was caused by greedflation. And then there's another concept, which is kind of a subset of it, which is shrinkflation. And people have been noticing this for years, even though they may not have had that term, where the contents of the package, everything you can imagine from soft drinks to potato chips to you know, cake, whatever you can think of. Over time, the contents of the package get smaller, but the price doesn't drop. And that I believe is a deceptive practice, and that's why we're just introduced a bill today to allow the Federal Trade Commission to investigate that. But you have to pass a law to make sure that they can label that a deceptive practice. So bottom line is we have to call this out for what it is. We have to make sure that we're not only giving the Federal Trade Commission more power. Federal Trade Commission has very weak powers when it comes to price gouging, for example. States have a lot of power, but the Federal Trade Commission has very weak powers. We got to change that. I've got a bill to do that as well. And then finally, we've got to help the families that are paying those higher prices. That child tax credit, which I mentioned, is part of that. It's a direct transfer to families to help them pay for the cost of living, the cost of raising children. And we should repeal or roll back those big corporate tax giveaways in that gross, obscene 2017 tax bill that gave permanent corporate tax relief to all these big companies. You know what they did with it? They had all these stock buybacks, and then they jacked up all their prices and made working families pay the cost. So this is, and they're, by the way, these companies are mad as hell at me right now. They're some of the people that are funding the super PAC. And you know what, just like FDR said, I welcome their anger. I hope they're angry. And I tell them this, get used to it, because we are not going away. I'm going to stay on them for as long as I have power. Stay on their back and make sure that people know they're jacking up their prices in a way that is, it's pernicious, and it's immoral, and it's disgusting.
Well, let me switch to another touchy subject, or not touchy, but a subject that's difficult right now for the administration and Democrats, and that's Ukraine.
Yep.
They need weapons if they're going to fend off the Russian invasion. But some of your colleagues, like Republican J.D. Vance, says, hey, we ought to be spending money on our own problems, the border, not 5,000 miles away or 4,000 miles away in Ukraine.
Well, it's going to be an issue in my race, too, because my opponents come out against the Ukraine bill, just like he came out against the border bill after yelling and screaming about what the administration should be doing. So this is a MAGA, it's a MAGA position to be against Ukraine, to be in favor of Putin. And I hope the speaker would at least allow a vote. I think if there's a vote, we could get as many as 300 votes. At least the House vote counters tell us that. But it's rare that you have an issue which is so clear. It's up or down on Putin. You're either for Putin or you want to defeat him. And we should pass this legislation to make sure that Ukraine has the weapons that they need, to make sure that they have the economic support for their own economy, and also to help our defense industrial base. If we pass this Ukraine bill, you know where most of the defense money will be spent? Right here. In places like Scranton, Pennsylvania, right down the road from my house. They're making shells that go right to Ukraine. And we haven't had that kind of production out of a manufacturer like that in a long time. So it's essential that Putin is defeated, and it's also damn good for us to do it.
Let me ask you one more before turning it back to James. That's your Pennsylvania Senate colleague, John Fetterman, came to the Senate under unusual circumstances following a stroke. How's he doing?
He's doing well. And in fact, the courageous move that he made was to go to Walter Reed to get help there, because he was suffering from a mental health problem while he was trying to shoulder or bear the burden of a post-stroke circumstance. So he had both problems on his shoulders, and he spent a couple of weeks at Walter Reed, and I'm not a doctor, of course, but I think it changed his life. I went to see him just before I got out, and I have never seen someone more relieved and more happy that he had worked through some difficult issues, and it's changed his life. I think it's allowed him to serve. And I'm really happy for what he did. And I think it showed a lot of courage, because there'll be a lot of guys out there for the next couple of decades who might get treatment because someone like John, who's so prominent, would stand up and admit he had a problem and get the treatment he needed.
Well, that's good to hear. James.
So, Senator, I got to give you A-plus in political acumen. When you talked about these companies, and I just have a couple of things that I say. I say it to you, you feel free to pass it on to caucus. Don't say inflation, say cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We understand what you're going through in cost of living. By the way, that's why we lowered the price of insulin, which is,
yep.
I guarantee you, 45% of the families deal with insulin costs, either themselves or through loved ones or family members or anything else. That's why the president released the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, because back then he knew the price of filling your Gulf was too high. And we understand that these corporations have taken advantage of this moment to conspire to even raise prices further than they would normally be. But when you say that, then people think you get their lives.
Yep.
As opposed to the worst thing we can say, and I'll repeat this, and say, well, inflation is coming down. That doesn't mean
right.
You lose them as soon as you say that. The moment you say, I understand what you're dealing with and the cost of living, and that's why we did X, Y, and Z. And then at the end of that, you could say, and it's, thank God, maybe we got a long way to go, but it is starting to moderate some. But I can't tell you how proud I am that you have seized this issue. And because when there's a focus group, when you get to it and they talk about the causes, the first thing they go to is these companies are using this as an excuse to raise our prices. So I congratulate you on something that is necessary, true, and demonstrates a great deal of political acumen, if you will. But but when we asked about Senator Fetterman, you had a little health challenge. Just tell us a little. You're doing fine. I hope you're coming along good after your surgery.
Oh, I was really lucky, James. A year ago on Valentine's Day, it was my surgery for prostate cancer, and I've been really lucky. And look, every case is different, but. But guys should make sure that they get their PSA tests and just keep up with it. But if you find it early and you get good treatment like I got, you can get through it.
Well, that's very great. And that's very courageous of you to speak of this, and we're so happy that you're doing well, because you're a necessary voice. Because why other people are chasing more glamorous issues, I think you understand the basic things that American families are confronted with day in and day out, and that's the cost of living. And I got to tell you, I think you're on the right track. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope I'll see you in Scranton. If not, I know I'll see a bunch of our friends up there. So good luck to you.
James, thanks. Hey, Al, thank you. And, I used to work for James, so. It's good to be back with you both.
Hey, Senator, I understand that because I work for him now. So I fully...
He was our North Philadelphia coordinator.
Yeah. I took orders well from James.
All right. Cost of living, not inflation, Senator.
Cost of living, all right.
Thank you.
Hey, James, now for the outrage of the week. At the Gong Show, also known as the CPAC convention, Matt Schlapp, the maestro of the once respectable conservative forum, and House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan joked about Fulton County and Trump prosecutor Fannie Willis's sex life with one of her assistants. That's a subject that those two should avoid. When Jordan was assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State, according to 6 Buckeye wrestlers at the time, he covered up sexual assaults on athletes by the team doctor. Then they say he has continually lied about it. Now, Schlapp was sued by a man named Carlton Huffman, a young activist and driver in a Georgia Republican campaign, who said that Schlapp, who was a big deal, of course, fondled him in the car against his wishes. Two other men, one a young Republican, charged Schlapp stripped to his underwear and rubbed against him. And another said Schlapp tried to kiss him. You know, Fannie Willis looks like Joan of Arc compared to those two, James.
So my outrage is the state of Arkansas. All right, so wait a minute, James. You lived in Little Rock in the Clinton campaign. You got a friend in Arkansas. Oh, very true. Let's start with the story of abortion. So the people in Arkansas are trying to get a ballot measure to make abortion accessible through 20 weeks. Of course, the national pro-choice people think that that's insufficient and they're not going to put any money in Arkansas, they're not going to put any money in South Dakota because they want to put in money where they know people. And of course, the uterus of a woman in the Arkansas Delta or somewhere in southern Arkansas, in El Dorado or Texarkana, but that, well, we can't be bothered with that, and we don't like it because it's 20 weeks and not whatever. Right. But that's why they beat the hell out of all of you, and that's why we're fighting day in and day out to protect this right that we had before, because y'all into wine and cheese parties and people that think like you do. But I got to go to the governor of Arkansas, Miss Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who Josh Marshall does a good job on talking points. Okay, we got to get this guy on the show. She went to the Super Bowl, flew out there, no one knows how, was in a Taylor Swift suite. No one knows who paid for it, how it got there, was staying in Las Vegas over the Super Bowl. No one knows. The governor's office doesn't say anything. You know, I remember in the late 90s when Washington fainted that Mike Espy's chief of staff got somebody Super Bowl tickets. The only criminal conviction in the entire Clinton administration was his chief of staff for buying underpriced Super Bowl tickets, while the governor of Arkansas flits out of there. No accountability. Forget the podium. I think Josh figured out it was like $202,000. And they saying, but it's not going to say anything about it. Well, I'm sorry. You know, I remember when the Super Bowl used to be a big issue to people. Now no one knows what the shit it is. And this person is doing all of this crap, and I guarantee you I could have a pretty good idea of who paid for this, and it's precisely and exactly who you think it is. It's people that have tremendous interest before the Arkansas state government, the Arkansas governor, the Arkansas legislature, but somebody's got to be bothered besides Josh to ask questions about this. High in the hell on a $125,000 salary, do you jet out there and stay in a 50-yard line box, hanging out with, you know, all the people that you supposedly decry? Oh, my God, Taylor Swift, that's all fake. She's a whatever. So we got to pursue this, and it's worth a lot more than your stupid podium.
Amen. Amen. She'll probably become a Taylor Swift conspiracy type if pressed by her right wing. But
they will not answer the phone. It's okay. You asked who paid? Fair question. Where'd you stay? Who paid for that? And I know because I've been, when my wife was in the White House, when Clinton was in the White House, very strict rules about what you could take from casinos or people like that. They couldn't comp you if they wanted to. But somebody comped her big time. And we need to ask who.
Good question. All All right, James, now for those terrific questions that we get from our terrific listeners. David in Sacramento, California. This is a recurring theme, which you've said we're going to address sometime soon. Said his wife is sending postcards to low propensity Democrats and Democratic leaning voters in battleground House districts in Southern California. She says this increases their chances of voting. And if they vote in a primary, they're more likely to vote in the general election. Does this work? What does the data show? It's one of a number of letters we're getting about what can we do?
I can't tell you how big I am into this. And I can't tell you, does it work or not work? I do know that political science is pretty determinative that repeater voter contacts do matter. And there's a thing, and our friend Simon Rosenthal, who a thing called Markers for Democracy, let me recommend this site. And Simon tells me, and I trust him, that they're very organized and you can get names. And I don't know what he told me. It's an astronomical number of postcards that they sent in this New York 3 election where, frankly, we were all shocked. But we had all the polling, all the data. We knew everything was going on. We didn't see this coming. I think when political science unearths this, they're going to find out. I think postcard writing, and I mean this in all sincerity, I think it's one of the most effective things that people can do to try to save this country. And I think if some people, if they get a handwritten postcard, just write it from the heart, and I think, you know, they're going to give you names. It's going to be strategic. It's going to be two people that fit a certain profile in states or areas that fit a certain profile. But I think this is something that people can do. I'm really excited that this kind of stuff can work. And it's called Markers for Democracy. You can look it up. And I have you can also read Simon's piece on Substack, which we are big fans of. But this kind of stuff is the kind of shit we're going to have to do to win this election. So the answer to your question, I am high on postcard writing. Of course, I can't say all right, but that's me.
James, you're right. Not only are we high on Substack, James, but you're burying the lead. We're going on Substack starting next week. Right. So we'll tell all of our viewers, our listeners about that. Jim in Windsor, Colorado says, I agree with you all that Joe Biden has been a great president. I also agree he shouldn't run in 2024. My question is, I will be voting in the Colorado presidential primary in a couple weeks. What should I do? I'm inclined to vote for Dean Phillips to lodge my protest. Jim, I don't really want to tell anyone how to vote, but that train's left the station. I mean, it really has. And, you know, if it makes you feel good to cast a protest vote, you know, go ahead, but it's not going to make any difference. Dean Phillips, I think, you know, I don't criticize him for what he did. He tried to raise an important issue. He finished a miserable fourth in Michigan. So Biden's going to be the nominee. And the question now is, can he win in November? And that's at best a 50-50 proposition right now.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, vote for who you want, or vote in the primary, or not vote, or vote for Biden, or vote for Dean Phillips. Goddamn it, don't forget to vote in the general.
Absolutely.
And Colorado may be a bluish state, but it's not that blue that you can sit home and forget about it.
No, and there may be some other races in that state, too. Rick in New Rochelle, New York, says in order for President Biden to put the age issue behind him, he needs to address it head on and speak to the nation about it, like JFK did about his Catholicism before the Houston ministers in 1960, or Barack Obama's speech on race. What are your thoughts, James?
I appreciate it. Nice guy, well-meaning, you're never going to put the age issue behind you. It's never going to happen. You can say the alphabet backwards, all right, on live TV, and I don't think he's going to put it behind him. By the way, I don't think he's going to say the alphabet backwards either. And I think that what we need to do is, yeah, we have a problem with the age issue. We have a problem with Gaza. We have a problem with cost of living, but I want you to think of this. We're winning elections left and right. This whole reproductive rights issue is the most powerful thing I've seen in American politics, but I'm sure in my lifetime, but I can't think of anything that's changed the overall dynamic and get them for book burning. That people, they're trying to get out of this and people hate it. So we got our problems, you got your problems, your problems are bigger than our problems, so we're going to talk about your problems. That's what I would say. But the age issue is not going to go away. There's no Larry David joke that you can pivot to make it go away because it's a real issue.
Right, it is.
It's not.
Mark in Lexington, Kentucky, the home of the Wildcats, who haven't won in a long time, or haven't won big time the way they expect to. Mark asks, making authoritarians governments admired spells Maggie. That's right. That's what they are. They admire Viktor Orban and others. What would their hero, Ronald Reagan, think of his party today? You know, I didn't agree with a lot of what Reagan did. Reagan was a conservative, a staunch conservative. Trump is an authoritarian quasi-fascist. That's a big difference. And what Trump has done with his domination of the Republican Party has just really kind of buried Ronald Reagan in the dustbin of history. And some of the people who for years in the Republican Party have been saying we're Reagan Republicans, let's see if you speak out now. Most of them are not.
Well, I mean, most of them are too old and dead now.
There were a lot of them. I mean, they ran in 1996 and 2000, 2008 as Reagan Republicans.
A sated figure. Think of what he stood for. He was for liberal immigration. He was for national security with a clear delineation between who was good and who was evil, a very clear delineation of those issues. I mean, everything that his philosophy was, Trump might be as anti-Reagan as he is anti-Teddy Kennedy or something.
That's what Lou Cannon says.
That just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, Lou Cannon, the great Reagan biographer, says that Trump is the anti-Reagan.
They're totally.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't be in the same room with each other. But Reagan was pretty steadfast. I mean, in some place he was, you know, kind of out of it. But he was pretty steadfast in his views of, you know, what was good and what was bad. And he stuck by him pretty good. And everything that Trump stands for, Reagan thinks is bad.
Yeah, the other thing is Reagan had a sense of humor. Trump's sense of humor is tail-snapping insults. That's all he's capable of.
It's different. Let's just say it's a different kind of humor.
Yeah, it sure is. And Kelly in Los Angeles says, why isn't more done to connect Trump to Jefferson Davis? I think Trump would not have voted for Lincoln. In addition, why isn't MAGA being referred to as the new Confederacy? That's a pretty good question, James.
It is a good question. I understand, and I'm very passionate about this also. But most people don't. I mean, what you can say is these were unpatriotic people that were traitors to the United States, and we're going down the same path. And all of the same things that they argue and you hear the right arguing about today, you know, from succession to no government, to I don't know, whatever they are, but I think you. Analogy is correct, but I just don't know that a lot of voters that we need have much of an idea who Jefferson Davis was, although I do, and I'm right here in South Mississippi, maybe 12 miles from the house he died in.
James, while we were talking, I just came in over the news. The Supreme Court is slow walking the Trump immunity case. They've set April 22nd for an oral hearing. That's their effort to come to Trump's behalf so he won't be tried before the election. The Supreme Court in important cases can move quickly. It took them, I think, 3 weeks in the Pentagon case, also in Watergate. This is an outrageous decision that's intended to help Donald Trump, and that's not what a Supreme Court should be doing. I just wanted to weigh in on that because I just saw
my view is often, I'll repeat it again, it all started with Bush v. Gore in 2020. They don't really give a shit. They found out they could do whatever they want to do. And they want to slow walk this. They want to help Trump. The idea that these fucking people, like, read a law book or look at precedent or look at tradition or look at, you know, the English common law, any of that shit is insane. And this is exactly what you got when you let them run over the country in December of 2020. I am
not purely
surprised by any of this.
Right. James, our final question goes back to what you were talking about in the beginning. Linda in Holden, Massachusetts, says she makes a recurring contribution to the Pennsylvania Democratic Party and would like to know if her money is well spent or if contributions could be better spent elsewhere.
Well, I don't want to get – I would think your money would be better directed towards, say, the Wisconsin Party, the Michigan Party. From what I know, the Pennsylvania Party is not one of the strongest, but I'll do a little more due diligence and maybe come back to this next week. But I know the Wisconsin Party, the Michigan Party, Virginia, I'm not so confident in Nevada, but I'm very confident in those state parties. I would do some research before I would send them more money. I could be wrong, or there could be changes in the party, or maybe they lined up a little differently. But I think I'm a big fan of the governor of Pennsylvania, and if he's not totally bought in, I'm not totally bought in.
Okay. Please keep those questions coming in. If we didn't get to yours this week, we'll try to get to it next week. They are so good. So thank you, and be with us next week. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, The Washington Post, Naked Wines, and Miracle Made, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. To keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.